But that's very good. And I wonder with your energy audit, you say you reduced by 25%. Do you have an ongoing effort to identify more ways to reduce energy consumption, such as, you know, the maturation of LED lighting and things has come a long way. And I imagine price-wise, I think it's gotten more competitive as well.
Does it make sense to skip ahead to slide 11? Just because these are great ideas and maybe, you know, okay. This is, I think, great elements for a sustainability work plan and things that we should be exploring when it comes, and then maybe we can come back and revisit the overarching policy, but it seems like we're getting some good feedback on ideas, and maybe we should.
Or we could stop asking questions and let
It's up to you. I'm going with the flow of the conversation. It's an organic process.
LED lighting, yes, great idea. All of I-90 will be lit with LED lights, Central Tri-State. So as we move forward with all of our projects in the program, the use of LED lighting is going to be incorporated. So, yeah, good point, good recommendation. So totally sustainability vision. So from an operations standpoint, kind of this is what I'm here to discuss with you. And granted, we've had a fair bit of discussion already. But number one, from a sustainability vision, look for a top-down commitment on sustainability or to sustainability that operationally that the agency will function with that triple bottom line, that previous diagram in mind, in that we'll incorporate and make sure and balance the social, economic, and environmental aspects of what we're doing and how we conduct ourselves. So from a policy would stem a plan, the development of a plan, a comprehensive operational sustainability plan, which would incorporate a number of the things that we've talked about here thus far. I guess, like we've pointed out and discussed a little bit, we have LEED for M-Sites, which forces us to look at and incorporate various sustainable initiatives in order to achieve a silver rating. And then from a roadway standpoint, we have INVEST. And so throughout INVEST, there's, you know, requirements. If we want to maintain our existing level of performance, we have to maintain incorporating the initiatives that we have been doing. And additionally, we don't want to plateau. We want to continue to improve. It was, you know, Paul pointed out. So we'll look for those example projects where throughout the country where we can find, hey, that was a good idea for that one aspect. Now let's try and incorporate that into a program standpoint. But from an operational standpoint, how we function, making sure that all the insights, not just the ones that are being rebuilt, have recycling programs. making sure that we're addressing energy consumption system-wide and not just at this building or at, you know, the Plaza 47 with the geothermal, fuel reductions, how can we achieve additional fuel reductions, various things along those lines. So the development of a sustainability plan, and I'll show you a kind of example work plan here in a second, would follow that policy. In that plan, we would develop we do a baseline, conduct a baseline of various aspects that we want. We choose the baseline, establish goals, and develop matrix for achieving those goals. And then last would be a sustainability manual. That would largely be, so we have our environmental studies manual, we have a design manual for all of our projects, design engineer's manual. We have a number of manuals, and what this manual would encompass would, if we're going to be doing upgrades to a facility for water efficient, or, you know, for to restrooms or to lighting, it would be a manual that would provide guidance for meeting the sustainability plan and the goals established in it. So it would have guidance for looking at water efficient fixtures, you know, improved efficiencies and lighting structures and things along those lines. So the area that we were, so the area that we were kind of discussing largely was sustainability work plan and things that could be incorporated into a sustainability plan. So here you have a list of numerous items that are typically included in sustainability plans with some timelines for conducting baselines and establishing goals, and then benefit slash priority levels. So benefit priority levels are really meant to show or highlight, okay, these fully embrace, so the high really fully embrace that triple bottom line. So by reducing electricity, natural gas, fuel consumption, not only is environmental benefit by less CO2 being emitted to the atmosphere, but it's definitely a cost savings. And then from the social aspect, we're being a fiscally responsible agency, and we can demonstrate that through those initiatives. So there's a social benefit there, and then also the environmental blends into that social benefit, in that reduction of those CO2 is a health benefit to the population as a large. So I guess I wasn't planning on going through each one line by line, but I just wanted to show these are typical work plan items or sustainability plan items.
So Brian, maybe one of the things that we would expect, just given the conversation, is that this annual electricity, natural gas, gasoline, and diesel fuel consumption, obviously those are all different types of, electricity and natural gas being a little bit different than your kind of the material you use for a fleet. But this would maybe help us, once you've established that baseline, come back to the board and maybe set some goals around how much we could, create efficiency around consumption, if there's something more we could do beyond the 10% reduction, for instance, or, establish those same types of goals from a baseline year for electricity and natural gas, right, once we have this assessment developed.
And I would say, too, in terms of the that first category, you could be looking at which vehicles could be moved to electric vehicles as opposed to gasoline or diesel fuel, etc.
What about natural gas powered vehicles? And there seem to be some vehicles that are natural gas now in fleets.
Brian, I'm sorry.
So alternative fuel sources. Sorry, go ahead.
That's all right. The one that I want to talk a little bit about is the third one down right before you said. Let's not go through this whole list. One of the things that without being able to quantify it, I think that we concentrate in we've gone to great efforts as an organization as we're building and expanding roadways, trying to be good neighbors to the municipalities and the neighborhoods that are adjacent to our roadways. And one of the things that's significant to me is the impacts of our roads. Salt usage. I mean, overwhelmingly, I think everybody gets compliments or comments about how well our road conditions during winter weather. That has to do with effective plowing and application of road salt. But one of the issues is obviously the runoff into the waterways, and it's part of the application of the salt with the chlorides. And I know that when I was at the county, we use some test areas to find the to define the effectiveness of use of beet juice and wet application for the salt to minimize those impacts. Understanding that our goal is to maintain a safe and clear roadway, I'm interested in where we are in being able to expand those technologies and our use of maintenance. Or our maintenance of our roadways, and what potential barriers there may be, whether we have the necessary equipment or what kind of cost and investment there would be to do that. So I don't know what we're doing at this point. So if you could kind of enlighten me, and if not, I definitely like to see that work into our work plan and goals moving forward.
Salt's one of the bigger issues or topics that I deal with. Especially when it comes to permitting. So one of the permits that typically have to secure is a 401 water quality certification from the IEPA. and due to us being in a heavily urbanized area and significant amounts of road salts being used, a number of the streams are impaired for chlorides throughout the region, which makes permitting a project where naturally you'd be putting down more salt a very difficult process. So I think there's, you know, under our practices right now, we do a great job. We're very efficient with the practices that we utilize and our, call it toolkit that we have on hand. Feel that our roadway maintenance personnel over the years has really refined their practices to make them as efficient as possible in that given toolkit. Can that toolbox or kit be expanded? Undoubtedly it can. Now, making sure that we operate and maintain a safe roadway network is the key to it. So yes, we could switch to an all-liquid application that would drastically reduce our salt usage, but it isn't proven to be worked to the level of service that we require of our system. So yes, some liquid application I think could be added. It needs to be investigated a little bit more for our system. We currently use some liquids, and that being calcium chloride, but we use calcium chloride in unique situations where rock salt doesn't work. So rock salt works down to about 15 degrees. Below 15 degrees, rock salt doesn't work anymore. So you use a liquid calcium chloride, and typically we just use that on our bridge decks, sensitive areas, maybe on some interchange ramps, things along those lines where you have a higher probability of something occurring. But there are technologies out there. There are practices out there that we could and should look to incorporate into our toolbox to lessen our impact on the environment.
So this, though, might be one that, you know, particularly when you're talking about things like whether it's beet juice, which I think we've all heard about different applications of that, but some alternative to the material that we're using where we might need a research partnership, right, to analyze this? I mean, is that something that the board might ultimately be comfortable with, given that?
I thought I remember reading that Minnesota has corn husks. I mean, this is being done in other places, right?
There's a number of technologies and practices that are used throughout northern reaches of the country. So Milwaukee or Wisconsin uses a cheese curd byproduct.
Does that smell?
That explains the hunger. So there's beet juice, and the corn husk is a newer one to me, but I won't question on that. I'm sure there's some type of usage.
I think I would have remembered cheese curd.
Well, I think Christy has a good point in getting a research partner on it, because clearly that.
We'd have to look. Obviously, there's research that's been done, so we wouldn't ignore that. But I guess what I'm saying, you know, high-speed roadway, different conditions,
right.
And I've heard about some of these materials being used.
Right.
And obviously, you know, wanting to maintain a safe system, that there might be a role, obviously, just for that, and I wanted to kind of get a sense of whether that's worth, and maybe on any one of these items, there could be that kind of role, so I wanted to make sure that was something that was worth exploring.
I think with the tollway, you know, basically you're dealing with extreme conditions, you know, fairly high traffic density, high speeds, etc., so anything that you look at has got to meet a pretty high standard, and it may be fine for a local neighborhood street, may not be fine for the tollway. So I think having that, approaching it a little bit scientifically would be a good way to go about it.
We had made the maintenance group, and you know, John Bennett could certainly talk a lot about this, and so could Scott Captain and the guys down there. They made a lot of advancements over recent years, as far as like having the technology on board in the vehicle to track how much you're putting down, mm-hmm. and doing proper calibration and maintenance of the vehicles during the off season, because that plays a huge role in it. I think we will have challenges. I think that research idea is a great one, or at least get some assistance. I mean, now is the winter time, so now is like the time when we don't have a lot of excess hours available to like study things.
Sure.
I think last year when we had restricted rock salt sources, it really forced them to do a lot of things and experiment with a lot of things, such as like 100 pound per lane spread rates, which are like crazy low compared to anybody out there. And you know, they had some successes under certain conditions, so they've been learning a lot. I think procuring some of the material we might need, like the tanks to store the beet juice or some of these other materials we might use, that's going to be a barrier, right? I mean, we could eventually, you know, overcome it, but
there would be equipment and there would be, and so I think that though with this baseline evaluation is one thing, and then we have to come back and start thinking about, you know, cost implications,
yeah.
of course, versus maybe savings, right, and payback, but
mm-hmm.
that will come, I think, over the
We're interested because we know it will save some money.
And I know that it's very important. On the 53-120 project, one thing that the BRAC emphasized was, you know, looking for alternatives to salt, obviously, because of the sensitive, what, you know, are and are certainly felt to be very sensitive environmental areas there. So,
yep.
As, you know, everybody wants to maintain the quality environment.
I think they're beginning to see that the chlorides are not only hitting our waterways, but they're starting to infiltrate shallow aquifers as well. And so if that's what we're starting to see, that we know that more and more is going to, you know, in the coming years, no matter what we do tomorrow, that it's going to, that will increase over a period of time. And so that if we don't start taking some action, we're all going to be faced with some problems here.
Do we feel that we're, as we're talking about this, and I didn't ask this question when we were preparing this, but we feel we've done everything we can in terms of filtering out the salt runoff that we do have, and I know we've done a great deal to create, you know, bioswales or other ways to filter it out, but do we feel that we've done everything we can to best understand which plants or, you know, and what material is best for filtering out or helpful in regard to getting the salt out of the water as it's running off the roadway?
Dilution is not the solution, is what we've always heard. You can't get it out. The plants don't. It sits there, and once the water hits it reactivates. So it's
once in solution, it stays in solution. Salt is the one pollutant that our stormwater BMPs, our bioswales, our infiltration doesn't do anything about. Plants, minimal uptake in them, nothing of...
So there's nothing that eats it, for instance? I'm not even talking about plants.
Humans.
Deer. Humans, yeah.
Deer. Talking about
fiber, no, just what happens with salt, it just stays there. As soon as that water hits it...
Dissolves in the water and...
It reactivates and it just keeps moving.
Without the help of a desalination plant or something that's incredibly expensive, right? Just what you just said.
So,
but I think to the earlier point, I mean, we're talking about this and kind of, you know, spitballing this thing, you know, about things we'd like to see, but I think the issues that are going to come before this board is to, you know, what's an appropriate action. You know, we need to know what the barriers are to getting into it, what type of investment is it going to take, what are the potential implications of switching to, you know, a wet application versus beet juice versus cheese curds, whatever it may be. So I think I'd like to see us engage in a real effort to evaluate that so that, you know, this board can take on those decisions and make a, you know, with all of that information, then make an informed decision about.
So information on cost as much, you know, that information kind of fully developed when we're bringing something to you for a decision, not just the environmental impact or the possibility of something happening, but also this cost.
Effectiveness on operations, cost, impact, you know, the benefit, you know.
Triple bottom line.
Yeah.
Right. Anything that's not currently reflected on this list that you'd like us to, I mean, obviously we can always add things, but is there anything we've missed here or that should be?
I just have a quick question. Brian, first of all, congratulations on your promotion.
Thank you.
I love this stuff. I think that I commend you all on sustainability. I think anything we can do to improve and help the environment is always a good thing. So just two quick questions. On that slide where you were showing the reflective roof and some of the vegetative trellis, is the idea behind that is to kind of, set some of that stuff up, get some data back, and see if it's scalable to other areas? Is that kind of the concept?
Yes, that's exactly it. So what we did with the North Tri-State, I used the North Tri-State as an example, and it's just one that we have, and it was intended exactly for that. So the bioswales on the North Tri-State were established as a pilot project to see how they perform. Well, granted, we implemented the Move Illinois program a little bit in front of having conclusive evidence but on their performance, but we had solid data showing that these things are performing very well, and thus now let's try and replicate this and lessons learned from those. So we've modified those designs a little bit to better fit the rest of our system. So yes, the intent of projects like these and initiatives like these are to test them out, evaluate them, see how they perform. What are the maintenance requirements of it? What's the long-term performance of it? Is it something worthy of implementing and conducting elsewhere on the system?
And then just the other one is just the other question, just on the slide. You just have the last slide, add up on the ideas of the work plan operations. That last one, building inventory, meeting green or sustainable building criteria. I guess I'm just thinking, is that meaning about looking at maybe retrofitting some other buildings down the road, or just kind of doing some type of building analysis to see what other, I think the chair talked about solar earlier, or what other some additions and add-ons to some of the existing structures and buildings.
So one, you would look at the existing system, this building to see what we have here that is a sustainable building material.
I think this was more about, so we've got new facilities, and to the extent we're building new facilities, it's covered by LEED, mm-hmm. right? So we would see that more on the capital side. I guess I always envisioned this line to be, if we do make improvements to existing facilities, where we're not just completely rebuilding mm-hmm. a facility, but you are improving the restroom facility, or, putting a new roof on, or...
With the idea of sustainability in mind.
Right. Okay. That's how I always saw this, but I'm open to any other interpretations of it.
Our carpet here has a life, but it has a lifespan, right? So we're going to need to replace it. What type of materials are we going to replace that carpet with? Is it going to be recycled plastic carpets, things along those lines? Materials that come into the building for future improvements, are they sustainable materials? Wood products, typically bamboos, looked at as a sustainable wood material. Plastics, so are those plastics that are coming in, are they recycled? Is there recycled content in those? Locally sourced, things along those lines.
So I've been involved with institutions over the last decade, I guess, that where there's been, and you may have already done this here, there's been a process where there's a third party between the utility and the consumer that comes in, does a analysis of the utility usage, and basically provides the capital up front to redo the facility out of the cost of which comes out of the savings that comes from the utility. I don't know if you've mm-hmm. thought about that or done that. Has that already happened?
It hasn't been done, but it's definitely something that as we look at any of our facilities,
It's got
a name, and I can't remember exactly right now what it is, but it's kind of the return on investment from the utility savings, so they front the improvements, right? I mean, I'm not aware of us doing that.
No, we haven't done. We had some.
I mean, this building suggests, but it might look. You might look at some changes.
Yeah, I have no. There's not been kind of a wholesale assessment on this building of is this. I mean, there have been improvements made. I think we've done some tinting of glass and other things, but and changing out some light fixtures. But for the most part, I don't know that there's been kind of the wholesale.
Well, the neat thing is you mentioned, is that you can get a third party that'll come in mm-hmm. and do that for you. You have to, you know. So, and I think there's a lot of local governments that have done the retrofit stuff through that process, are saving money.
So there's we have looked at CA. We had an independent analysis or audit done through a CDAC grant, and through that we have implemented some of the recommendations. Dave, are you aware? I know the dampers, we've corrected that. There are a number of things that we've implemented on it.
But looking more at this, I think the point was looking more, so we've made some improvements based on the energy audit, which we talked about, but I think the point was kind of more the whole scale. You know, there are companies out there that will, again, front the cost of the improvement, and then they're paid back with the energy or utility savings from the initiative. So kind of looking more closely at, you know, whether it's this facility or others, whether there's anything we could do in that regard, I think that type of assessment probably makes sense.
I wonder if they would recommend a sustainable tank reporter.
This one's been very sustainable.
It's been sustained so long that it's older than I am.
I think we got a return on investment.
Absolutely. But a good point. 72
cents, it's yours.
Not to continue to talk about any particular, exactly to do that. Salt usage, it's a very interesting topic to me. It's one that I deal with more than I would like, but it's something that I think that we definitely need to address from Paul's standpoint of what he was getting at and what I mentioned on our efficiencies of our current toolkit, our toolbox. dropping down to 100 pound spread rate last year was huge for us. We found where that works and where it doesn't. The conditions, the types of conditions and the scenarios which we can successfully utilize that spread rate and where we can't. You know, our spread rates were 5, 3, and 200. And so I mean, dropping that down to 100 is a significant change. ABL implementation or installation of ABL on our vehicles allows us to track them to see, you know, the speeds that they're going, the amounts of salt that they're placing in various locations. So like I said, not that we're as efficient as possible, but we're very efficient with our current toolkit. What's needed? It's not the, you know, the next steps wouldn't be a complete change from our current operations. Additional storage tanks, liquid storage tanks, and a brine maker.
We're looking at that. I think that, so these are all great ideas. I don't want to cut off the discussion, but I also am mindful of people's time.
Just had one more, I guess, comment on this, and skipping ahead to the next slide, which talks about keeping the board updated and reviewing the progress. If it is possible, because of the educational, speaking for myself, just for me, when we're talking about the benefit level, to think about the three circles or whatever they are, there's a sustainability benefit, a social benefit, and an economic benefit. And I just think if we can quantify those, it would be interesting to see in each of these categories what the implications are. Because all of this is about trading off on, in some ways, costs against benefits.
Good. I think that'll be a helpful way to assess. So our next steps, one of them is to actually review the draft policy one-pager that I think you all have received, and ultimately whether we receive draft feedback today, you know, or not, we would, I think, anticipate that will be posted, right, Brian, and we'll solicit feedback more broadly from the general public. So I don't know if there was any feedback on the policy, if we wanted to kind of walk through it at all, but it's, you know, fairly short document that I know you all have had a chance to take a look at.
I like some of the pre-work, the groundwork. I was thinking, especially on some of the social component of the triple bottom line of going to the forest preserves and, you know, Rocco doing a lot of that work and incorporating a lot of those ideas into the plan, I think is just a good baseline, a good place to start with regards to the wetlands. So I just want to commend them on that as well, as incorporating a lot of those folks who are the experts and have some great ideas.
Appreciate that. The only, just taking a look at that slide number 12, with, oh, it's up there, that's 12. I know we talked about this, but I just want to be clear. Biannual policy review can either be twice a year or every 2 years, and we're talking about reviewing it every 2 years.
Every 2 years.
Okay, so I just want to make sure everybody's on point. The other part with that is, and as we, I know, we're trying to get done, but I'm just going to go back again to the wet tanks a little bit. I think one of the things that, as we evaluated, and understanding that it might not be appropriate for our entire roadway based on scientifically what's been able to be shown, you know, whether it's effective on those traffic volumes, I think that's an area that's ripe for us to work with other governmental entities that already have those wet tanks and perhaps be able to share resources with them. So, again, I know we're going to collect the information and I want to do that, but I don't think necessarily that that's going to be an economic barrier to us applying it if we can show that there's a good marketable area.
So partnerships
if
we could share a common resource, if it's practical for our operations, then we could share with a county or local government or what have you.
There you go.
That's a practice that DuPage takes part in.
Good. See, we can become the agency with the cleanest water in the state.
Well, as I say, I think the you know, salt has been seen as, you know, kind of a problem, but the cumulative effect of it, as we just talked about, it just doesn't go away. It sits there, and the more we add continuously, we're seeing it starting to enter the shallow aquifer. Salt. You're 100% right. This is an area that I think we really need to be focused upon. It doesn't mean we're going to find this simple solution tomorrow, but I think we need to stay really focused so that as improvements and possibilities come about, that we take advantage of those.
And maybe this is what Director Reddick meant, but I wonder if because we're so big that we don't have partnerships created with smaller entities that will help provide resources for us to make some of these big changes. If you need a gigantic tank to store beet juice in, and you have 25 municipalities that also want to use beet juice, can we figure out how to create the partnership that goes to our bottom line as well?
Absolutely.
Good.
So I think what we hear is that we're comfortable, at least at this stage, with the one pager and the policy document that we could post it. Okay, great.
Now I'm trying to remember, we have a specific reference to operation.
I'm pretty sure that we do.
Yes, it's the second dot point under the vision. Right?
Yep.
Do we monitor with our contractors, Paul? I mean, I know we do a lot of recycling of old materials. Do they talk to us about what they're doing in terms of sustainability?
I don't know if we've had any specific discussions. I know Steve Gillen, our materials engineer, is continuously working with the industry to see, like recycling asphalt and reusing it in asphalt pavement. I mean, we've really been pushing the percentages on that, which really required the whole industry to convert a lot of their equipment. But they were all on board with it, you know, once they realized, you know, it was going to cost them less money in the long run, and we were getting the same quality product out of it. So we can specifically look into reaching out to them and seeing if they have any other ideas or if they're aware of any other things. I mean, we do, like, you know, Brian mentioned, Steve, you know, went on to that Transportation Research Board, and then also from our consultants, because they work throughout the whole country, actually, we can get a lot of input from them, too, on what others are doing. So it is helping us keep abreast of some of the things that are being introduced in other places.
I'm wondering, consistent with Director Reddick's earlier point, if that's something that a lot of townships and municipalities could benefit from. I don't, I can't envision necessarily these big construction companies wanting to get together and having an all-day something on sustainability, but maybe where we can start sort of cross-pollinating our experiences with others and help think about how the whole construction side of this can be sustained or improved.
And we've definitely been trying to build this partnership with them, with, you know, this Invest program and the mm-hmm. LCA tools. We need a lot of input from them, and we need a lot of participation on both sides, because it covers, you know, everything done, not just, you know, the planning. It covers the actual construction and the actual final maintenance and operations of those things.
Just real quick, so on the construction side, we do have air quality specifications in our contracts that require them to use low sulfur diesel, which is kind of standard. At this point, you can't find anything else on the market. But retrofits, emission retrofits as well. So we have that aspect of it. And then also Invest, two things on Invest. One, not only is it just the design of the project doesn't meet certain criteria, but it's also the construction practices that go into sustainability of the overall project. So Invest will do some rating on, incorporate good considerations to construction practices. And then with us developing Invest, you know, recognizing that District 1 had developed ILAS, and knowing that there are, recognizing that there are some aspects of ILAS that are good initiatives that should be included and incorporated in a grading system that Invest didn't. We modified Invest, and we got FHWA's approval for that to incorporate those aspects. And we're also reaching out to communities as a whole, region as a whole, to say, hey, this is a program that we're developing that has FHWA's backing.
Thank you.
So.
Okay. You're ahead of us.
So I think we've made it through bullet one, bullet two, I guess post public comment and review of comments and adoption of a policy that will be the trigger for us to develop something along these lines. So our sustainability plan, operational sustainability plan for the agency. Now, for your involvement, future involvement, I guess I'm interested to get your feedback on what your thoughts may be on this. Annual progress updates, 5 minutes each board meeting.
I would think that the policy, what is the time frame for, so we post the policy for how long for public comment?
So I'll address that. So what we want to accomplish out of this meeting, obviously, is a lot of good discussion, but what we want to do is at least start advancing, putting together a policy, getting this one pager out there. Basically, all this is a very high-level statement, a directive, and would be adopted by this committee to give us a direction. This is what we want to do. This is what the agency is going to do in perpetuity. We'd like at least just have this policy put out for some form of public comment, like we've done before with other policies, the noise, with our interchange policy, landscape policies. Our thought is, if we're okay, if this committee is okay with what's the content of this one pager that was provided, we would put this out for public comment. It would go out, you know, on our website. We would direct it to some of those groups, the Environmental Policy Center, Open Lands, and others, Forest Reserves, to give us some feedback as well. It goes out for public comment for, I believe, it's a 21-day period. Get some feedback, some comments back from our website. Come back to maybe a future meeting and say, here's the comments that we've received on this. Maybe we make some changes, maybe we don't. Maybe some tweaks, modifications, whatever it might be. And then have this policy formally adopted. And then what this really policy would do for us is now give staff the comfort and actually organizationally through all to say, okay, now here's what we're going to do. This is the edict that we'll all follow moving forward. So really the first thing we want to do to get accomplished out of this meeting, see if you have any thoughts, feedback on this. Sounds like we're okay with it? Okay. Then what we would do is then immediately after this or within, you know, short time after this meeting, we would put this out for public comment on our website and we'll get some comments or feedback, whatever. We'll share that with you at this meeting.
And maybe what we'll do is we can send a note out to the entire board with a link to where the comment section is on the website, so then if you want to forward it to anyone in your databases, I know that people are constantly checking to see what is on the Tollway website. And of course, we'll do our own outreach to groups that we've worked with to seek their input.
Yeah.
But we'll make sure you all have that as well. That might.
So I just have one question about timing and process, Rocco. On this, the last dot point in the right-hand column, prepare and implement within 1 year this sustainability plan. Is do you anticipate that the plan will be designed, shared with this committee, and then the implementation would start?
That's what Brian's talking about. It's the whole sustainability plan.
But I think, could we not, you know, as we look at these elements, you know, a 1 to 6 month review, I wouldn't imagine that we would have to wait, and some of these are 12 to 18 month time frames, so maybe the question is, do we have to wait for the entire plan to be developed before we take action on any of these maybe shorter term elements? Or I guess we can assess a comfort level from the board of whether, you know, I would think that if we thought there was some value in them, we could implement them before the entire plan was done.
Well, I would, based on the timeline that we're talking about, I think that we're talking about kind of having a hardcore plan in place, identifying some issues that we're going to continue to be working on, and that's the purpose of the biannual review, that we would then be able to update it depending on the progress. So that's a long way of saying no. I wouldn't think that we have to wait.
Yeah. So we'll check. Maybe we can, if we could, we'll certainly commit to, the overarching policy is one thing, but as we have more information in some of these subject areas, we'll come back and have more substantive discussion about the plan development and then the implementation. But I don't think that we have to have answered all of the questions on that work plan in order to move forward with implementation on the items.
Right.
So, okay, good.
Good.
So we're okay with putting this out?
Yeah, I think we just determined that.
Thank you. Anything else? Any other questions? Okay. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Referring back to the agenda, we do have an engineering planning item there. I take it we have no input there today. Am I correct?
No, those are just the...
This
is kind of the standard
that's
agenda. It looks like we used the agenda from the full meeting.
Right. It does look like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that we have nothing on 6, 7, unfinished business, none, new business. We have absolutely no need for the executive session that I'm aware of. And so there's no further business to come before us today. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.